It is the Penn Morning Show. It is, I just realized, that nerdy Star Wars day, May the 4th. Some of you are listening to this in your Luke Skywalker costumes, or whatever the new version. You woke up this morning, you grabbed your lightsaber. You're so stoked. Blake, I think you strike me as like, I've never seen Star Wars guy.
I have never seen Star Wars.
I thought it was the opposite.
How about that?
Either he's never seen it or he has lightsabers.
No.
Different kind of nerd.
Yeah, no, Blake's just like, is it about numbers? They're like, no, Blake, it's about action. He's like, not for me. It's like, hard pass.
If I want action, I'll go to a heist movie because there's numbers involved, you know?
You're calculating
the payout for each guy.
Yeah, that's the part you like.
The casino, I'm more interested in the blackjack hands being played in Ocean's 11.
Yes. The safe cracking, you're like, that's the part. That's the part of the show.
Good algorithm.
It's a great algorithm. It's a really good one. Yeah, so lightsabers and Obi-Wan Kenobi stuff. I couldn't think
the
of
only
Chewbacca's.
Thing I know about Star Wars, because I've never seen it, and I'm sure we'll
okay,
have
this is offensive now. Now we're going to have a show night where we watch Star Wars together. I've seen all the Star Wars.
I was a little bit...
Even the new ones.
I was
except
more
for
of a Harry Potter
ones.
Girl. It was tough to consume all of those, okay?
Oh, was it tough to consume all of those upon your 35th viewing of The Office?
Yes. But the thing that I know about Star Wars is that Baby Yoda, and everybody went nuts for Baby Yoda in the last couple of years, and that thing is super cute. So I could be convinced to watch just because of Baby Yoda.
That's a whole other thing. That's a show called The Mandalorian that came out on a different streaming platform.
Okay, they need to relax. Like, there's too many things.
Listen, they absolutely need to relax. I actually like the old Star Wars movies. They're great. They're obviously phenomenal movies. There's just no debating it. But they ran it back with this new series, this new Star Wars series, and it's the exact same story as the old Star Wars, just it's like Luke Skywalker's, I think, daughter or granddaughter or something like that. Anyway, I didn't make it all the way through all the other new ones. I just saw the first one of this new three, and I went, oh, they just made the exact same story but with different characters and tried to pawn this off. But it doesn't matter because the Star Wars cult will pay for anything, right? They'll just pay for anything. It's such a monolith a massive moneymaker. Doesn't matter. But either way, both of you should see the Star Wars movies. I think that's a little...
At this point, there's like, too many. Like, you say, oh, we'll have a night where we watch the Star Wars. Like, we got to take a week off to catch up on the Star Wars.
But that's fine.
I don't want to spend that much time with you guys.
No, that's fine. Number one, Eilish is the queen of, I don't have the time. And then we hear about Eilish's days, and it's like, oh, you had all the time. Like, you had so much time, Eilish. Like, you had...
Well, when you nap for 4 or 5 hours every day.
No, it's more The Office marathon, daily marathon, the rewatches of what's like crushing through old seasons. It's like, you got time. You got the time. Blake, I'm a little bit more concerned with because he keeps trying to add jobs to his resume to the point where it feels like Blake, all he's trying to do is get discovered at one of his other jobs and that they just make him full-time at one of the other jobs, right? Like, that's it. He's hoping so badly that Fast Breakdown becomes a bigger deal and they go, you know what? Why don't we just do Fast Breakdown all the time? And he's like, yeah, that's what I was angling for.
Except, but what they'd tell me is they'd be just saying, well, also do it. Don't do it instead. Do it also.
Yeah. Well, you didn't know that when you started, though, did you? You thought that was your escape. Now you're just... You thought you were digging a hole at the prison, and you thought, oh, boy, I'm getting out of here. And realize all you became was a guy who digs holes and a prisoner.
Stupid.
Yeah, so... big day at the ballpark, May 4th. We'll see some shots tonight as the Blue Jays try to avoid a sweep. Maple Leafs, no one will see, luckily, though, in this country, because everyone will be watching the Leafs game. It'll be on a second screen, so if the Blue Jays blow it, congrats. But guess what? You were back in this is a second nerd reference, the Eye of Sauron yesterday. Blue Jays, everybody saw what you did, okay? We all were watching. We had the big eye on you. You got the focal point, and you sucked. You sucked. Alec Manoa was great. Everybody else, sit in the truck. It's time for a scolding because this team has had nothing but kisses and love. That was a miserable viewing experience yesterday. I had almost zero fun. You watched Manoah pitch, and then you went, wow, so fun. And then every other moment that Manoah wasn't throwing baseballs, to me, was a nightmare.
When they only got one out of that bottom of sixth mini rally that they had, I think I texted you some curse words, like, you've got to give Manoah more support than this. And I saw some criticism that, yeah, you could have rolled Manoah out there for a seventh inning. He was at 91 pitches. But also, he just gave you six innings of one-run ball. That should be enough for you to win the game. You should be – and I know a lot of stuff unraveled in the seventh, and some of it wasn't necessarily related to how the Jays were playing until things snowballed. There was never a scenario in which you were going to win that game with one run.
No.
So before you get to any of the, the seventh inning, the umpires, whatever, you have to score more than one run. I put the stats in the doc now. The Jays have only scored 16 runs over five Kevin Gausman starts and 12 over five Alek Manoah starts. That they're 8-2 when those two pitch is a minor miracle, considering you only have less than three runs a game when those two guys are on the hill.
So thank goodness Gausman won his last start, and the Jays squeaked that one out, right? They squeaked it out. Because you know what it felt like to me? I compared Kevin Gausman to Roy Halladay the other day, and the entire time I was sitting on a tweet in the drafts of, this felt like Roy Halladay. Not only did I watch a guy go out there and dominate, and I was in awe of his performance, but the team basically said, so you're good with this game tonight, right? We can just kind of strike out, ground out, fly out kind of situation. And luckily, they won. Last night didn't quite feel that way because Manoah was dominant, but they pulled him a little early, which I whatever. It's a long season, and I'll trust the Blue Jays on this one because they've been pretty good in that department this year. I haven't had too many times where I was upset with their decisions to lift a starting pitcher. But you're right, Blake. One run against the New York Yankees is not going to cut it. And it's not like these guys haven't had opportunities. And this brings me to my frustrations with the team time. Because I didn't go umpires first. I'm going to kill these umpires because, again, I already shot them into the sun on Twitter, right? Like, I don't know what else you want me to do. I already commissioned a cannon.
I tried. I was there. Yeah. I would have jumped the boards. And Donovan
Neil is just screaming with a mouthful of hot dog.
Yeah.
I was tossing dogs at the dogs.
Ailish over under yesterday for hot dogs was 2.5. Might have been the worst line ever set in the history of fake Vegas. You know, like she ate. Why did you eat 5?
4.5.
So 5.
I could not stomach the half of that small hot dog. By the end, I was ill.
Now they're small hot dogs, Blake.
No, they're really small.
Yeah, I know. Just come on, just let me go.
Like, I thought they would be like regular size hot dogs. I would have put the line somewhere different if I had seen one before I went.
I just pictured Ailish coming back to her seat after spending an hour in the
lines
ballpark toilet.
Were so quick. Oh,
yeah. Matt, no, you, I meant you in there. The toilet, and then to, like your friend at the game. Like you missed this whole seventh inning. You go, what happened? That's you. But anyways, so. The offense, I've seen way too much Raimel Tapia to start the season. Like, there's just way too much. It's too much. It's too much Tapia. And you know what else it's too much of? I hate saying it, but we're back with, this is why Zach Collins was given up for free, huh? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, fine. I guess he's not going to be, we didn't uncover a Hall of Famer here. It's just too much of nothing hitters and too many nothing ABs. And this gets to the Kirk thing, is he finally turns around just a little bit yesterday, and again nobody gets going around him. Kirk also has he should have been absolutely stapled to the pine tomorrow, even though he's getting going for getting picked off in that seventh inning. That was as bad of a pickoff as it gets. Especially, it's like, where were you going, buddy? You're not stealing a base, so why are you standing off of it like that? What is happening here?
Complete inattention.
Yeah, just not acceptable baseball. But yeah, they're getting Teoscar Hernandez back, but does anyone really feel like, if they had Teoscar, they would be special? Lourdes, Chapman, Kirk, Tapia, you go down the line, these guys aren't hitting. And when they have those nights where they throw Zimmer into the lineup and they throw, like, the Heinemann guy into there, even though he laced the double the other day, there's just too many holes. And I know around baseball, offense is down, blah, 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 blah. I've seen a lot of baseball teams. I've watched a lot of baseball games. This offense has five special guys at the top when they're healthy, and then four meh bats. And that's going to be something that's pretty easy to navigate with or without Teoscar Hernandez.
So, yes, what JD's referring to there is that offense is down around baseball. So as disappointing as the Jays have been by weighted runs created plus, which adjusts for park factors and things like that, the Jays offense has still been 5% better than league average. Guess what's not going to cut it in the AL East if you want to be one of the top teams? 5% better than league average. Yeah. And you look at that lineup, and yes, Teoscar's going to help a lot. He's going to help Vlad get better pitches. He's going to slide Gurriel and Chapman into more logical spots in the batting order for them, but he's not filling four spots in the batting order. No. And I thought one of the things we were most encouraged about coming out of the weekend and some of the wins they've grinded out was, hey, at least a couple of the guys at the bottom of the order are working good at bats. They're going deeper in counts. They're fouling pitches off. They're making a pitcher work. Jameson Taillon threw 71 pitches over six innings yesterday.
I think through the first three he has was at 29, and I went, way
fewer
to make him work,
12
guys.
12 pitches per inning. What are you doing? Yeah. On a night that the bats aren't there, like if you're Bo and you're starting to feel it and coming out of your slump a little bit, yeah, jump on something early. Taillon's a mistake maker sometimes, but the rest of these guys, 12 pitches per inning, not even? That's just not going to cut it process-wise.
I'm just going back to what I had said all along. I thought the Jays needed to add another impact bat, and that got a little papered over with the Chapman addition, because people automatically assumed that Chapman was going to bounce back and be the hitter that he was in 2019. And I didn't see that as a certainty, just because they had done that with Semien, and Josh Donaldson wasn't even a regression candidate or something. He was just I got better guy. Either way, to me, that's the kind of failure of the offseason still is. I don't like the offensive depth. I wish that there was another bat on the bench, because they really didn't do that. They went out and said, we want to get left-handed guys. Well, they went out and got Raimel Tapia, who I agree is a different player than some of the guys they have, but he's not different in the sense that he's out all the time. Like, he's just out. That's his specialty, is he gets out. And when there's guys in front of him, especially when he's hitting that five hole, I don't know how you couldn't look at that and say, wait, what happened here this offseason? How was this not better addressed so that you're one injury away from Tapia being your number five hitter? Like, was he ever the fifth hitter in Colorado? And was Colorado ever a team? I actually think he hit at the top of the lineup. I think he was like a leadoff guy sometimes. But fifth is outrageous. Like, what is he doing there? That doesn't mean I don't understand it whatsoever. And I know, again, he has a double yesterday, but his OPS now is awful. He's not a bat. He's not a serious bat. And I like Lourdes Gurriel and I like Matt Chapman. But they were supposed to be, you know, the 7-8 guys. And when they're your 7-8 guys, you feel good about it. You don't feel good about it when they're supposed to be 5-6 or 4-5.
No, you don't. And look, Tapia is also not doing the stuff that was supposed to be the encouraging stuff, right? Like, he's supposed to be a guy that, yeah, he's not going to put a charge into the ball, but he works good plate appearances, he gets on base, and he can do a little damage with his legs there. He is not even remotely doing that at this point. And yeah, he's predominantly been a top-of-the-order guy, JD. Most of his career starts have come there. He's only had 27 career starts hitting fifth. So this was pretty rare, and now it's his, like, everyday spot.
Yeah, now it's just his job. He's a five-hole guy.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know. I get it. You want a lefty in there, I guess, and you don't want to stack your lefties at the bottom of the order where an opposing manager could come in and go lefty, 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 lefty.
I don't think that any manager in baseball is going to worry too much about where Raimel Tapia is in the lineup.
Exactly. And yeah, you could say that, oh, well, it makes it easier for them to go to a Loogie if you've got Tapia and Collins and, you know, whether it's Biggio or whoever else, Zimmer, it makes it easier to go to a bullpen. Well, you know what? You could go to a righty against those guys, too. It's not a big deal. 548 OPS for Tapia and a sub 250 on base percentage. It's just... And I don't mean to hang it all on him, because it's not all his fault. It's one of those things where if there's one of those in your lineup, nobody really minds, right? Like, you can have one spot like that, and you can have guys pick him up. But the fact that it's felt like, yeah, of course he's hitting fifth. Who else is going to hit there is very troubling.
And this is it for me is, yeah, when Teo comes back, and if the top five guys are going, the offense is going to look special because those players are special, and so they're going to have runs. But my issue with the team is that They're one guy slumping or one injury away from looking like this at times. Part of the struggles have been Bo's in a slump. Now he looks like he's coming out of that. Great. But you don't get performances from your top guys and you feel like, okay, they're going to be helpless at the plate for a while. The depth has not looked good. Kirk has obviously been an issue. I hope that he ends up coming out of it because they need his bat. Absolutely, they need his bat. They're going to need more from Matt Chapman. I know that he's got the RBIs and I know that he's drawn some walks. He's been okay, but he's been a little underwhelming at the plate so far. He's striking out too many times. They've got to find
his career so far overall by WRC plus. So even adjusting for the new offensive environment and stuff.
Yeah, I know that we're all going to be defensive about Matt Chapman early on in the season, as we should be. But yes, so far it has not been, I would say, up to expectations. They haven't had a guy. They had Santiago Espinal earlier, who was playing above his head, and they had Zach Collins playing above his head. And now, right now, they don't have that. Right now, they don't have the player who is playing above himself and helping carry this offense and stretch things out. So that was problem number one. Didn't like the offense yesterday. I don't know how anybody could be liking the offense right now. They've been totally covered up by great pitching, both as from the starters and from the bullpen. Number two is, Bo, awesome. Coming around at the plate is always going to be more important for you. But the thing that was lost in that inning with the umpires, and again, we will get to the umpires, is Bo continues to struggle in the field. And if you recall, we were having debates at the beginning of 2021 of, hey, are we sure this guy is the everyday shortstop? Are we sure that he needs to be guaranteed the shortstop position? He went during the offseason, the 2020 year, the 2021 offseason, and he worked his ass off. And he got a lot better at that position defensively. All of a sudden, he's regressed. He struggled with his throws in the past, but he's not struggled with bobbling balls to this degree that I can ever remember. I don't know if it's a little combination of overthinking things, if it's a little bit of, hey, a guy who's this confident is a bit rattled. But yeah, Blake, what do you make of Bo's defensive struggles? Because it's becoming a almost nightly issue.
It's really tough, and I don't know what the answer is, because at this point, like, you've locked in that you're not moving him off of shortstop. Like, Espinal is probably better there defensively, but Espinal is still not 100% guaranteed everyday player. And Bo Bichette is one of your faces of your franchise. You're not moving him off that spot, so it's on him to get better. I think we all remember last year he had a really tough April and then eventually figured it out and rounded it into form. I would have understood an explanation of, well, he's feeling at the plate and that's getting into his head a little bit in the field. But now that the bat's coming around and the defense is going the other way, I don't have anything tactical for you. Like, hey, this or that is causing it. I think a lot of the times this stuff is mental. Or random. So there's nothing to do but keep trying. It just, you hope that it doesn't get in his head to a Russ Adams level of, well, now I'm afraid to throw the ball if I don't field it cleanly right away.
Well, you could see that his lack of offensive production seemed to be mental, and he found a way through that. And you saw his bench shots of him being frustrated and finding a way to kind of get out of that. So you hope that he can do the same thing for the defensive play. But it's tough because it's like one thing is going well and the other isn't. And then it flip-flops where one thing is going well and the other isn't again. So I don't know. How do you get out of that? That's a mental toughness type of thing. You got to just find a way through it, right?
I just what I don't love about Bo's start to the season is that it's the, well, he'll figure it out and it'll be okay. And you know that he's going to regress positively. And so I don't think that you're ever saying take him off shortstop, because Blake presented it as, well, what else is the other option? But they also constructed the team that way to a degree, right? Because, and I guess this is where my issue comes in, and this has been my issue. This was my issue with Derek Jeter, so I'm going to apply it to Bo Bichette. I've never really understood why baseball is a sport where just because someone is good offensively, they get to dictate where they play in the field. And it's professional sports. And for a sport where you play 162 games, the idea that Bo Bichette is the shortstop because, well, you want Bo to be happy is nuts to me. It's like, no, Bo should be happy because he gets to play professional baseball in the city of Toronto and that he's awesome at it and he gets paid millions of dollars to do so. Like, that's supposed to be the deal, not just, oh, you're automatically the shortstop. And so I don't know. Maybe it's just, but it rubs a part of me with the sport that has never felt quite right. And that is that part, which is the entitlement sometimes of positions that you end up getting in the sport.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying with the Jeter thing. Like, absolutely, A-Rod should have been the shortstop in that scenario based on
but
merit.
But the Blue Jays don't have an A-Rod.
Right, and Bo's 24.
Yeah.
Where, hey, if the Jays told you, well, he struggled last year and we saw him come around and we believe that he could do that again, like, you'd kind of give them the benefit of the doubt on that because he is young and he has shown it, not to be an elite shortstop, but he showed last year he could be an average to slightly above average shortstop over the course of a whole year. So you
I thought he was above average last year. I thought he was above average.
Yeah, I mean, he was above average from, like, May onward. I don't want to throw the whole month of April out on him. But, yeah, this is it. You've got the infield coaches. You've got no choice, really, but to let him work through it. Maybe you get him a DH day coming up here a little bit, a clear the head, only focus on coming out of it at the plate kind of day. But even that is, well, look at what it does to the order then, right? Because then you're playing another infielder that can't hit.
Not only that, my curiosity with this is, like, again, I'm not advocating that Bo come off short because that's pretty clear that he'd play there and he should play there and that they have no other choice, right? Like, Espinal, we're still not sure, is an everyday player and he's the only option that you could even consider at this point. My issue is that this is the way that they built the team with that in mind, which was, well, Bo is only ever going to play shortstop and no matter what, that is his position. Regardless of a lengthy track record of playing there amazingly defensively. In a sample size sport, it just becomes a given that someone does that based on what their name is. It happens sometimes, but to me, it shouldn't be the way that something is. That's all. I guess that's my only thought on it. Now, quickly, umpires, before we get into tonight's Leafs game. Just do your job. Just do your job. Honestly, like, that's all I have to say to you, umpires. Obviously, Vladdy was on the bag on the first play, and I don't know how they didn't piece the replay together. It's one of those, I knew they weren't going to overturn it because you couldn't tell conclusively, but I go, well, how are those the camera angles then for this? Mm-hmm. You know, like, how do we not have a better camera for that exact play where you can see just right down the line and see somebody's toe? We've got to have the technology for that. So that frustrated me, but the tag is just impossible to ignore.
I
umpire
could see it from the stands.
Of course,
like everybody
every
could see it.
You
could
see
it
from
so
space.
Frustrating.
You could see it from space.
The Star Wars galaxy could see
it. Yes, exactly. It just do your jobs. Honest to God, everybody wants you guys to be robots. I know I can do your job as good as you with a week's training. I know I can because you guys are all a million years old and you can't see and you don't know what's going on. You're half the time I'm looking out there. I'm just thinking, you guys are guessing. You're guessing. It's fine. It's fine to guess. Strike zone's inconsistent every night. I put up with that because everyone does. But to miss obvious calls that swing games like that, that's just a hero call where you go, I didn't see. It's, do your job. Do your job, umpires. For love of God, do your job.
This takes me back. I have this take in every sport, and it's sometimes a pace of play comment, but it's also a get the call right comment. This idea that some things are reviewable and some things aren't. Some things are challengeable and some things aren't.
It's
and then
so
every
stupid.
Single time they go and they sit there with their little headset on and they're talking to someone in the main replay booth and they're watching countless replays. We have the technology and the leagues have the manpower to just have a central video review booth. And why isn't there someone at the MLB office watching these games and radioing in, hey, he was out. He got the tag. Why is getting the
why
call
why can't umpires
right
some decide to review it? Like, why does it have to be the team?
Well, I love that he even goes to his buddy. He goes and says, Charlie convinces him, hey, go talk to the third base umpire. And he's and the third base umpire goes, I wasn't doing my job either. I wasn't watching. I was doing my own thing. I was thinking about my Wordle of the day, and I just was not into the game right now. I was thinking about other things. Leafs playoffs tomorrow night. What are the matchups going to be? I don't want to do my job. I don't have to look at baseball for the whole nine innings and have to pay attention the entire time. Enough.
There are these silly little lines drawn everywhere of like why and when and how can stuff be reviewed? And like, all MLB seems to care about, all they're experimenting in the minor leagues is speed up the game. You know what would speed up the game? Have someone sitting in a booth, quick message down, quick text to the ump or pitch calm or whatever. Hey, he was out. Boom. You save 5 minutes of arguing with the manager and reviewing it. Not even reviewing it. Us reviewing it via replays on the broadcast as the umpires discuss, well, I don't know. Should we talk about it more? Like, this is a simple one. We have the technology. We have the manpower. You want to speed up the game. You want the calls to be right. Everything points in that direction. Get it done.
Here's the thing. This is a silly thing
to have to talk about.
I'm normally a we've gone too far with technology guy that we should just abolish it and get rid of. But it's just baseball makes it impossible because the umpires are so bad. Okay, Leafs tonight. I was cranky this morning because just the Blue Jays game rubbed me the wrong way all the way. It was just a tough game to watch. It was just umpires bad. Bad defense, no offense, blowing a Manoah start like that. Cranky. I'm cranky today. Leafs will make me feel happier because it's just going to take away all the anxiety. It's going to put all the anxieties in the basket. I won't feel anxious at all. No. Big game tonight. Massive game for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Opportunity to go up 2-0 in a series. Ailish, what's the thing tonight you care the most to see?
How you respond to Tampa's response, because they are not going to roll over and allow for that game to be how they're defined. They have consistently been able to bounce back in their series where they've been successful. They've won two Stanley Cups, whether it's one and a half or two. They don't just allow for a bad game to trickle over to the second game. They're good at bouncing back. They're good at erasing, leaving it in the game behind. And I think tonight it will be a completely different game from the puck drop and how Tampa performs. They had the worst game that we've ever seen Tampa have in playoff history. All their stars were non-existent. Their goaltender was awful. And the Leafs not only outplayed them, but I think there was a little bit of good fortune there. So how do you get up for this game, another home ice game, which shouldn't have a problem in terms of the momentum of the crowd, but you want to show that that wasn't a blip. You know, you are this team. You have grown. You have found a way to get your stars on fire. Your goaltender got a shutout, whether it was a hard game or not. You got to string together two massive performances. You got to go up 2-0 or at least fight this game out. And that's what I'm most interested in. Where's the toughness that we saw game one in terms of not only physical toughness, but mental toughness? That's what I'm looking forward to most tonight, to see the Leafs hopefully string together these two really impactful games with Tampa's, which I'm assuming will be a big response.
I'm more interested in Tampa tonight than I am Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of different ways. Because there were a few things about Tampa that looked hard to reverse. One is that their fourth line actually was like pretty impactful for them this year. And if you guys recall on one of the Leafs' goals with their top line, the first one with their top line, they had the fourth line of Tampa out on an offensive zone draw, and the Leafs went the other way, scored, and made those guys look like they were all stuck in cement. Those guys couldn't move. They didn't have at all a good game. Nobody had force in that game. Where was the Stamkos line? Braden Point didn't look to be himself. Tampa just didn't look right. There was part of Tampa that went, oh, maybe you had a bad game, and they'd absolutely get that. But there was also a part of me that went, maybe this is partially just who Tampa is at this point. If Braden Point's not 100%, if you have a fourth line that looks too slow to be playing in this series and that's normally important in terms of setting a physical tone but also scoring, what does that make you look like if all of a sudden you need to bump down to three lines as a team? Who are you exactly? Your blue line looked slow. Your goaltender looked human. So yeah, I'm most curious to see Tampa, and I guess the Leafs' response to it, for sure. It's pretty broad in terms of the amount of things that we can play off of that. But to me, it's about Tampa tonight, is what do they look like? And you're right, the Leafs' side of things, to me, is more mental, the way they respond to those things. And how they look, just are they engaged? Are they in this? Or if they're not front runners in a game, right? Because we all knew this is, we'll go back to the Philadelphia 76ers comparison one last time. Nobody could question whether James Harden would look good in a 20-point win for the Sixers, which he did in Game 1, which he did in Game 2. It was what happens when you get punched in the mouth with the Sixers, right? And so I think that's the next question for the Leafs is, what happens when you get punched in the mouth? If Tampa can get to the middle of the net or the front of the net, can Jack Campbell hold firm? Can the Leafs continue to block shots at this rate? Can they engage in the physical play? Can they continue to dominate puck possession, or can they find their ways in their moments? So what happens with Tampa's push is I agree, Ailish. Like, that tonight is the story of the game. Blake, do you agree? Do you have something else that you're most curious about?
Yeah, I have something else. And just to, you know, look at the Leafs side of things, because obviously you win a game 5-0, you go into the film session the next day, you don't want to be patting yourself on the back too much, right? You still have things you need to work on. one of my favorite things to track in playoff series in any sport is kind of the pre-adjustments coaching staffs make of, hey, this worked, and we expect Tampa to do this differently, so we're going to do this differently, and then Tampa's adjusting to something that's no longer a part of your game plan. Uh-huh. I'm most curious about how Spencer Carberry maybe tweaks the power play. It was probably the one negative you could take away from the Leafs game in game one is that they were 1-for-6 on the power play. And this is a team that obviously an historically good power play, also the second highest rate of shot attempts on the power play in the entire league. And that dropped off by about 20% during the power plays in game one. And that drop off was even more extreme for Austin Matthews. And watching it back, a lot of why is Tampa Bay really treated Austin Matthews like a basketball star on the power play, where as soon as the puck went in his direction, there was one guy tight to him and a second guy in his shooting lanes. They're basically not quite a double team, but the focus was take Matthews out, take Matthews out, take Matthews out. And I'm curious to see how the Leafs either try to free Austin Matthews a little better so that they can't do that, or take advantage of it underneath Austin Matthews where, hey, if you have two to Matthews when you're shorthanded, that means you're 4-on-2 elsewhere on the ice, right? Yeah. So some of that is on Matthews to make a quick read and make a quick, clean pass, and then we'll see if Tampa's penalty killers can adjust and recover in time, close out, so to speak. But there are also some potential tweaks where, hey, we saw the power play early in the year before it was this level of power play operate a little lower on the ice, a little lower in the offensive zone when they were trying out the, hey, everyone's going to play a different role and we're going to see what sticks and how versatile people can be. I'm curious to see how Carberry rolls it out. If he just trusts the process with what was a very, very, very good power play this year, or if Tampa Bay actually did something that Toronto wants to adjust to here with the Matthews coverage.
Yeah, the whistle is obviously going to be a huge thing tonight too, right? Is it going to continue this way? My guess is that it won't be quite the same. It'll be something a little different, but yeah. The other part of it is, it looks like Bunting is coming back, and it looks like he's going to slot into the top line. And I mentioned this on yesterday's show. I don't think Bunting coming back plays every shift with the top line. My guess is that there are moments in the game where they put a different look there. But what happens if he looks a little not ready? I think he is. I think that they've been very cautious with him and that he's ready to go and that they felt that they could lean on their forward depth. It looks as though Kasha is going to head down the lineup. He's going to become the fourth line player and end up with, I think, between, what is it? Who is going to get in?
Spezza and Simmons?
Yeah. I was kind of curious, though, that it would be Spezza that ends up getting in here, because that means someone else would be coming out, because right now,
oh yeah, I guess Nylander, you have Blackwell in somewhere too.
Yeah, Nylander and Engvall didn't play, and Blackwell was between Simmons and Kasha, so I don't know if Spezza actually gets in or what it looks like, because Clifford skated at practice, but he's obviously not going to play because he got the one game suspension. I was pretty shocked by the one game, by the way. I got to tell you, I think that I went too really high. I said 5, I guess, yesterday, which was too much considering it was playoffs, and I was reminded of that with Versteeg. But either way, I thought it would be 3 at minimum after the show.
A lot of people justified, like, oh, he basically sat the entire, like, he basically got already one game suspension because he didn't play, and the penalty was in the first 5 minutes. But that's not how it works. Like, they didn't think about that. Oh, well, he already kind of sat one game. NHL player safety wasn't like, maybe we'll just give him one more. Like, that doesn't come into account.
Yeah, time served doesn't exist. This isn't a courtroom.
I wonder if he has given himself a suspension, though. Like, if the Leafs go back to Clifford at some point this series, or whether that actually took him out of it. So let's take a break. We'll see how the Leafs respond tonight. Plenty of guests today. Again, another loaded show. Craig Simpson, who's coming on later. Craig's done, by the way, I think I put it in our doc, but somebody posted that he is now done, I want to get the number correct, 950 national games. Unbelievable. Ooh. 950 national games. We'll talk about Masai Ujiri's media conference yesterday. I thought it was fascinating for a reason that people might not have thought. Luke Fox to set things up with us. And then at 7, we're going to have Jeff Merrick to talk about some of these stories, and we'll get his hipster pick of the year as we do every single season. But the A-list is next, and apparently it's a good one. A-list bullish about this A-list. A lot of laughing before the show from A-list about this one. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and A-list, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590 Fan. It's May 4th. May the 4th be with you. To all our Star Wars fans out there, I have a special A-list for you today.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
As someone that has never seen Star Wars, yes, I know. I scoured the internet for ways to incorporate that into our A-list this morning, and I have succeeded. When you think of Star Wars, sports isn't the first thing that comes to your mind. However, there is plenty of sport going on in the Star Wars universe. Who needs the Olympics when you have the Galactic Games?
Yes.
Planets aplenty take part in this event. And during the days of the Galactic Republic, I literally don't know any of these things that I'm reading, they were held every 7 years on a different planet. And here are four different sports. And I would like you guys to evaluate.
Is this a Star Wars thing that like is written into Star Wars?
Yeah, apparently. Like there are sports in Star Wars.
Okay, all right. Let's hear it. I'm stoked for this. I'm really stoked.
Four different sports.
100% going to be better than Quidditch.
We'll see. So tell me if you like this, if you participate in it, and if you'd be good at it. Wegsphere became the official sport of the Galactic Empire's New Order. Thousands of worlds play this ball game. It takes place in a low gravity field, and the simple target is to get the ball in your opponent's goal.
Wow.
Simple, right?
So we had space, we had galaxies, that could all participate in sport, and they figured out
simple.
They go, we invented soccer. we reinvented soccer / basketball / every sport is get a ball into the target. Okay, cool. We got low gravity, so that means I'm guessing that you can just be up in the air. It's like
kind of float
space
around.
Slam ball. Float around soccer / handball. Okay, got it. Float around soccer, handball.
I think you guys would be good at that one.
Okay. I appreciate your vote of confidence in this, but yeah, okay. I don't know if you're implying that because there's low gravity that Blake and I would now be better athletes, like that if gravity was involved.
I don't know. I've never been in low gravity.
Okay. But all right. What is it? Wegsphere is the number one game.
Wegsphere.
By the way, they really didn't invest a lot of time in this, the Star Wars writing staff. They're like, what should it be? I don't know. It's soccer, handball, but no gravity.
Sphere.
Ooh, spacey. Okay, what's next?
Okay, so we're starting simple. Next is called Hutball.
Okay, I already like
it. Its beginnings were a way for debtors to pay back their loans. Maybe
Ooh,
we should do this
I
with
like
the
this.
Wake and
I
Rake.
Like
it's a violent sport, basically starting as gladiator duels. And if you cheated, nothing wrong with that. The Galactic Republic made it illegal due to the number of deaths. It was called the blood sport of kingpins.
Awesome.
So it's a very violent sport. I don't really know, like, couldn't really find much information about how it's played. But regardless, it's a way to pay back your loans. Very violent. Sounds kind of, to me, like a Game of Thrones-esque.
Sounds like gladiators that they have as gladiators in space. Space gladiators.
Love the sport itself. It sounds like the closest thing we're going to have to space pro wrestling.
Hate
the origins, though. Sad to see that even in Star Wars times, capitalism has gone too far, and if you're not one of the ruling class, you've got to fight for your supper and fight for your life. Guillotines for all the people who are trotting their delinquent loan people out there. I don't know. Good sport, so, bad root cause.
So they randomly select two teams to play against each other, and it's no holds barred. you're encouraged to have violence and cheating, and you're supposed to bring the ball into the opposing team's camp. So it's like the opposite of capture the flag, maybe, where you have to go find the thing. You're putting the ball in their camp, yeah, but you're allowed to cheat and be violent. And
sure.
Yeah.
I like
so
how
the XFL.
First one, no. Yeah. I was going to say the first like the first one, they go, hey, we're putting it into the goal. And this one is we're taking the ball and putting it in a camp. It's very different. It's very different. It's just violence in the camp. Okay, so what is next? Because I like this one. Gladiator, football, yes. XFL, I think that's the way that we're defining this one, is criminal. Actually, were there criminals in the XFL? I can't remember if they did that the original time over. No, I don't think so. But either way, there's just so basically criminal XFL guys who want to kill each other to get the touchdowns. Got it. All right, what's next?
All right. It's continuing to get more aggressive. Shock ball.
This sounds great.
You need to be brave to play shock ball. The aim is to stun the opposition with an electrically charged ball.
Yeah.
The team with the most conscious players at the end are winners.
Yeah, this is a great sport. See, now we're talking. Finally, they figured something out here. Because the other two were just, okay, so we really got galaxies in on handball soccer. I guess it's popular. It's globally popular. It's easy. It's translatable, whatever. I would think, though, that across the galaxies, there would be a lot of different species that would have major advantages in these sports. Like, how do they have these regulations across to make it an even playing field? This is one where I go, well, if you can be shocked, you can play shock ball, you know, like if you can be knocked out, this is a real, like this is equality, people. This is what we want. This is what we strive through. Everyone can shock somebody. Who knows? You even need to be athletic. There's all kinds of different things you'd be great at with shock ball. Shock ball for me is the number one sport of the galaxy. I would be, if we were doing a radio show in space, I would be advocating for shock ball to be over weg ball as the number one sport of the galaxy for equality. I love shock ball.
Yeah, it's like dodgeball with much higher stakes.
Yeah.
The way I'm interpreting this one.
And dodgeball is awesome. It's the best one. When you get
if you can dodge an asteroid, you can dodge a shock ball.
All right. Here's another one. They play lots of games in Star Wars, apparently.
Well, you said four, so yeah, this is the fourth. We got it.
This is a good one. I feel like Blake would like this one. I feel like both of you like it. Shock boxing.
If well, like now boxing, they just went too far with the whole shock thing.
Boxing.
Yeah.
The
these writers, I got to tell you, I'm really disappointed. Like, I thought, you know, finally shock ball is a little around us. And they were just one of the just ways shock box. This feels like these guys, they just had to fill out this exact pamphlet or whatever you're reading, because these have not been in the movies. So there's just the Star Wars universe is so expansive that they have to have answers for everything. And these are the lowest rent writers on the staff. And they went, guys, we need this copy in 3 minutes. And they went, okay, soccer handball with no gravity, football, but more violent. Shock ball, and shock ball's good. Oh, why don't we shock boxing? It's just the same thing, but boxing with higher stakes. Okay, got it. Let's get it out there. I don't need further explanation on shock boxing. I think we all get it.
The gloves shock you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I think we figured it was either that or if you go up against the ropes to like defend yourself, the ropes shock you or something. Well, exploding barbed wire ropes match.
Actually, I would have liked if it was shock boxing just in only the verbal sense. Like, you were shocked by the boxing, you know? Like, it was shock boxing. That, there is no shocks. That's actually the twist. There's no shocks. It's just normal boxing.
One of the only things I really know about Star Wars, and I think there's something missing here. I was expecting it in this segment because we've got the Miami Grand Prix this weekend.
I was just going to add in pod racing as one that I thought we all would know. It's basically space F1.
Yeah.
With pods. It's a dangerous race.
Pod racing is the one. We had a video game. It was great on N64. That one was
exactly
dope. That was a great game.
Very popular.
Like, yeah, we're doing
Go
okay
Team
with
Haas,
pod racing.
Space Haas.
Yeah, Anakin.
Team Space Haas also doesn't have merch you can buy.
Yeah, I signed up for the newsletter. I still don't have it. Anyway, I just can't. I can't even talk about Haas and their lack of merch. It's actually like pushing. You guys are pushing me away from the team. You're pushing me away. I'll always stay loyal to Haas, but you know, now my money is going to go to my footy club, Carlton FC. You know, just saying, my baggers. Aussie rules, the baggers, the blues, let's go. Baggers and blues, let's go. Big matchup. Right. Huge win last weekend, big matchup
we'll
again
this
weekend.
We'll talk about it Friday for sure. Yeah. In the wake and rake. So that was your Star Wars sports history lesson of the day.
Thank you.
If you know other ones, text in 590-590 or which you'd like to play. Moving on, we had our first overtime of the Stanley Cup playoffs last night. We had our first double overtime of the Stanley Cup playoffs last night. And we also had our first triple overtime of the Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Rangers, Penguins went the distance. Shesterkin stopped 79 shots.
Yep.
The second highest single game total by an NHL goaltender on record behind Korpisalo during the 5-overtime thriller in game one of the 2020 first round series.
Yep.
Chris Letang played 46 minutes. Adam Fox and Keandre Miller played 44 minutes. But the wildest part of this whole story is that goaltender Casey DeSmith had to leave midway through the second overtime due to cramping. Yeah, I don't blame you. And Louis Domingue had to be thrust into the game as cold as ice. So he faced 17 shots. Malkin won it in triple overtime.
Yeah.
But what he says post-game in his interview is the best, and Vic has the audio for us.
I actually had quite the meal in between the first and the second overtime. I didn't expect going in, but maybe it sustained my energy. So it was cool, though. It was cool to be part of that.
You say quite the meal. What was it?
You know, some spicy pork and broccoli. Not the best.
So he doesn't think he's obviously going to go into the game halfway through, you know, the periods, the endless overtime. So he eats spicy pork and broccoli. Then he has to go play. Feels like me yesterday at the Jays game, full of hot dogs, but a bit of high stakes. So I don't know if there's a worse thing to eat in between intermissions. Do you think he just, like, whose responsibility is it to be ready? Is it just he was starving, he had to eat his post-game meal, or should he have waited and had the idea that he might get put in the game?
All those guys ate food during the intermissions, but they wouldn't have had a spicy
pork maybe like a
meal.
Peanut butter and, you know, banana.
But I don't blame him at all. What's he supposed to do? He's probably starving. They've been at the rink now playing hockey for hours on end, and he's not expecting to play. My only thing for him, if there is a slight criticism, would be there's potential for the goaltender needing to come out of this game. There were moments where, because I watched this game, it was impossible to turn off. This time of year is really bad for my health because I can't go to sleep when there are meaningful sports on. It's not a option for me. I just cannot do it. And that game last night, there's nothing more fun than double overtime and triple the anxieties of it. It's funny because the hockey starts to tail off. You can see everyone's tired, but so fun watching it go down. And Shesterkin was brilliant. He made so many great saves. It was fun watching Sid just play around the net, even late, where his brain starts to take over, right? Where his brain is just, it
no
doesn't
legs,
matter.
But no brain.
Yeah, just all the brain of Sid is in overdrive. But there were moments where you thought Shesterkin might have to come out too. Like, he was slow moving at a couple of points because, he faced 70 shots and he's moving around the net. He's wearing heavy equipment. Casey DeSmith cramps because goaltenders lose a lot of sweat during hockey games. It's a really strenuous job. I know it doesn't always seem like that
you
when Jack
know.
Campbell's back there not getting any shots for an entire game against the Lightning. But, that was a DeSmith, I'm glad it's just a cramp, but he hobbled off. He had to go to the bench. And you're there, and the broadcast is doing the thing of, is he really coming out? He's coming out. But if you're Casey, or if you're Louis Domingue, it's something that you get to say as a legendary story, but never would have come out had it been the other way. Probably wouldn't have affected him too much. But Louis Domingue actually made some big saves. Like, they tested him early and often because they started doing the just get the pucks on net thing when a new goaltender comes in. Thought it actually did the opposite. Think that strategy is dumb sometimes. I would rather...
warmed him up.
I think that the strategy when a goalie comes in, this is what I want to talk to you guys actually about today in regards to this game, shouldn't be just put anything on net, see if he lets something in. It's a professional goaltender. It should be try and make sure that your first shot is a tough shot. Try to make sure that your first attempt...
crash the net. Give him a little
bit of like, don't let him feel the puck a little bit and get involved in the hockey game. Make sure that you treat it as though it is a normal play. I just thought they let him get in the game, and then he made a huge pad stop a couple of minutes later, and I went, if I'm a Rangers fan, I'm furious the way they handled this. But, good for Louis Domingue because he stepped in, he stepped up, and it actually felt like it was an advantage for them when Shesterkin was starting to move a little slower despite who Shesterkin is. Either way,
maybe
fun
the Rangers
game, fun
should
night.
Have swapped out for a fresher goalie as well.
Yeah. Honestly, I thought about it. I was like, at what point in the game does he play so long that, one, you want to have him not be dead? This is what's so ridiculous about hockey. We have to go. We'll put another one of your kickers, the rest of the A-list, later in the show, 100% in the 7 o'clock hour. But hockey is so crazy that they're going to make you play two games in one night, and they go, well, is the other game moved the next night? Nope. Get ready to go. Such a huge disadvantage to them for the rest of the way out. I'd be curious to see what happens usually to triple overtime teams.
Oh, exhausting. Quickly before we take a break, Allison in Toronto texts in, fun fact, every Tough Mudder race has an obstacle called electroshock therapy, which involves running the length of a football field, getting shocked by live wires. Wow, that's Star Wars-esque. Sounds awful. I will never do a Tough Mudder. Thanks for the heads up, Allison. That's a little bit of a
Can I say
Wars
something to
universe.
Tough Mudder people? Hey, good for you if you want to do it, and that's cool, I guess. But none of us actually care or think you're tough. I just want you to know that out there. Like, none of us have ever looked at you guys doing Tough Mudders and thought, wow, it's so cool, it's so tough. It just, not once. Not once in the history of humanity. It's all you thinking that you're doing something cool. If you feel good, you feel like you accomplished something, awesome. But if you're doing it for other people, don't. Because we don't care.
We certainly don't, because I won't do that. After the break, we got Jeff Merrick on. Let's get set up for tonight's massive Leafs game and see who his hipster pick of the playoffs is. That's after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.